And so for him to talk about how he really had to start completely over, it's not like being this well-known comedy writer, director bought him any shortcut. He had to basically go to the bottom. And to do that partway through life is really rare. Recordando.
That's remembering. But yes, recording in progress.
Where the computer is remembering our words and sound now, so it's the correct word. I am a Spanish genius. Soy genio en español.
Yes, you are.
Soy genio de español en el mundo.
Oh, Dios.
En la biblioteca en la
Oh, no, shut up.
ciudad.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm hello, everyone. Just in case you forgot, because we've been absent for a month or something like that. I don't remember.
Forgot.
Yeah, I'm probably exaggerating, but it feels like that. How do you feel, Austin? How are you?
Good.
Yeah.
Good. The year is off and running. And we're 1 week from the Grammys, which means there's a lot of like events and stuff this next week. So
Yay!
it's
And
fun, but the schedule is a
preparation.
little crazy. Yes, you've been making some
I'm
very cool
dressing.
stuff.
I'm dressing up. How do you say? I'm dressing up us.
Yep, dressing
Yeah,
us up.
dressing us up. Yes, I'm not a genius in English. That's clear.
Lo siento,
But
soy un genio de español.
yeah, not everyone has it, but. I try. So I've been working. I'm excited because I've been working on this brooch for you.
Brooch.
Brooch. There you go again. I found a tiny figure, like a toy of a face hugger, because of course Austin is nominated to another Grammy for his score on Aliens Fireteam Elite, and decided to celebrate that and to include the aliens topic in our looks. So we'll see how that goes. I bought that and I literally just today grabbed like silver nail polish and painted over. Bought a bunch of like,
Bejeweled.
like rhinestones for nails, like tiny little, and
Yeah.
then one by one and super glue. While listening to, stand-up comedies and stuff like that,
Lots of
I
stand-up.
finally lots of stand-up
You're
because it took
becoming an
me.
authority on who's who on the stand-up
Yeah, I
scene.
know.
You say you sound like that's like something to feel. You're like, oh, I know. Like as if I had just said you have a problem with eating too much chocolate or
I
something, and
do
you're
as well.
no, it's nice to know to be an expert in the world of stand-up. It's exciting.
I used to listen to them before, and I kind of like just lost it.
Yeah,
I
fell
forgot,
out
I
of the
guess.
habit.
Yeah, I but now I feel like while I work with my hands and I need my eyes to focus on my handiwork or whatever you like my craft, I have them in the background telling jokes, and then so I spend the day doing that, and it's fun. I
It's
like it.
actually, I think it's a testament to how good the best of them must be. Because in my mind, stand up, even though it's very common that there's stand up albums that you can get of like live from, Madison Square Garden, here's so and so's set or that kind of thing. Like there's live stand up albums that
Right.
invariably get released that are effectively just the audio of a given routine. I've always thought that their body language and their facial expressions
Oh, yeah.
are such a big part of it that the fact that you've been able to enjoy it as much as you have when
Oh, yeah.
basically only listening
Yeah.
is pretty
It's not
impressive.
the same. It's not the same because yesterday, actually last night, I did enjoy. I listened to this guy, Neil Brennan. And guys, you have to go check him out on Netflix. He has two specials. One of them is called Three Mics, which I saw. I made Austin watch it last night after I had it on my background the same day, yesterday, earlier. And it was different to listen. I was listening first and then I watched it with you. And there are some things that I missed. And it's a different experience. Anyway, really he's so good that I watch it twice. So yeah. You should.
I thought his really was good. Great, and I thought that I loved his format, and I loved, speaking of body language, things like when he was talking about the sort of inner voice of testosterone doing these push-ups and stuff inside your head.
Yeah,
the fact that he could
see that at first.
He could just lean on the body language and kind of keep recalling that, and it's one of those funny things where the album version really doesn't do it justice, because that was really funny, especially the way he kind of stares so intensely. You know, he has this very kind of piercing gaze.
It's very funny. Yeah. And talking about him, I don't want to spoil much this one, but he says something about his career and how he is like Benjamin Button. He's like starting on reverse or something like that. And I want to start the episode talking about that. Mm. I actually want the episode to be that, starting over. Like, just let go of something that is not giving you as much, I don't know, enjoyment or fulfillment, and go do something else that you think your gut tells you is, this is it, this might be it. Just go and start over and try it. I think we should approach that.
Yeah, it's interesting because he did make a very memorable comment where he said they were flying high on the Chappelle Show, and he was this literally Emmy-nominated writer-director.
He's been in the business his entire life since he was 17. Just a little background. But he never did stand-up until a few years ago. He was always like a writer, producer. He's always like behind.
And the way he phrased it was that he was hiding, sort of hiding from the fear that comes from putting yourself out in front. And I found it very affecting and memorable. Yeah. I've thought about it a bunch today since we watched it last night, when he talked about going from this Emmy-nominated, very in-demand, busy, acclaimed writer, director, and the Chappelle Show was a huge deal when it was at its peak. And then literally he said he went from that to open mic nights, which is the bottom of the barrel for the world of stand-up. That is literally anybody can just step up to the plate. It could be your grandma. It could be your school teacher. Anybody wants to just go up and try their hand at it and see how they do. And as you might expect, the vast majority are awful, which means that it's also not going to attract like a big crowd. It's really hard to become well known because you know, you're down in I don't want to sound disparaging of people that try it, because I have huge admiration for those who summon the courage to do that, but it is kind of like being down in the gutter. It is the composer equivalent of, you know, I go to a conference or something and I just say, hey, I have a CD, anybody want to hear my music? And there's 10,000 people all doing the same. Like if I went to Comic-Con, you know, 100,000 people, and I've got like a little thumb drive of my music, and I'm just hoping I'll find someone who might want to listen to it, and then maybe I could start my career that way. I mean, it just seems like your odds are basically the same if you just stay home and do nothing. It just feels like it's barely going to do anything, if anything. And I've always been one to say, bet it's better than nothing. It really is better than nothing, but it might only be just barely better than nothing. And so for him to talk about how he really had to start completely over, it's not like being this well-known comedy writer director bought him any shortcut. He had to basically go to the bottom, and to do that partway through life is really rare. And takes so much courage and commitment. This just the sheer resolve to go, no, I want to do this instead.
Right.
It's absolutely amazing. Every now and again, I meet somebody like that, and I always find them, even though I love to be there for, well, come on, you were and are still young. I'm talking about somebody who's well into life, and they also have every.
I was doing signals like, yeah, I know. Thank you so much. Yes.
Also, in your case, it doesn't count because you were always an artist. You weren't taking it professionally serious.
I kind of have my version of that in the like pop, you know, culture, the community, the cosplay conventions, all that. Like I used to be invited to all these cons around Latin America and etc.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm here and I'm like, I think I'm gonna buy a ticket to go to LA Comic Con and see, you know, just as a normal, regular human being. I'm not a cosplayer. I'm not a guest. I'm nothing of those things anymore. I'm just a normal person that is just enjoying whatever, you know, mm-hmm. whatever we do there. So it sometimes feels like it's like a punch in the gut. But in my case, I guess that is just an example. I don't want to make it sound like this. I'm so sad that I don't get invited anymore, because that was a part of my life that I'm not pursuing anymore.
Yeah, so, exactly. That's a it's not like you were rejected.
Yeah, no, for sure. I should try and submit. I know that they do that. I just don't. I'm so new here. I don't know how to manage to find the talents. I know that there are conventions that have like a website and you fill up the form, and if they choose you, you get invited or something like that. I don't know, but never tried.
No clue how that works either.
Yeah, no idea. But
I don't think I would have ever been to a single one of those if it weren't for people like Chandler and like White Bear PR. Set it up.
I was used to get invited because they know me, right. And just, you know, they know my work and they heard of me and they want me to be there. But things are changing and there's so many talents around and so many, you know, influencers or whatever that changed the industry. And yeah, I'm not sad. I'm just not as I'm not into it as I was before, which is great. If I get invited, that will be awesome, but I'm not pursuing that anymore.
Well, here's also the difference, I think, with this guy or from other people that make these huge life changes, is when I first met you, that was still very much the dominant thing in your life. You were traveling all the time for these conventions and doing photo shoots and all that. But you still seem to think of it as effectively a hobby. You know, you never really said to yourself, you never described yourself to me as a professional cosplayer. but you were increasingly going, I really wish I were more of a visual artist full time. Like you essentially presented yourself as a visual artist, but there's just limited opportunities. So you meanwhile right. had this other thing going on, but it was, right. it was really just this hobby that kind of got out of control and really just went really a lot better than most people's hobbies. How it seemed. It didn't really feel like you had to walk away.
If I had the opportunity in Costa Rica to be a performer, an artist, a painter, I'll take every opportunity. But I didn't. And all I knew was conventions and the convention environment. And so I just got involved in that and they like my work. And so be it. I was in there for fucking 10 years. And yeah, now I'm trying to see if I get to be an artist here. And it's literally just, you know, start from the top.
Start from the bottom, more like.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting because it is in music, yeah, you would say from the top. But in this case,
yeah,
yes.
You got it.
That humbling act of essentially wiping the slate clean and saying, I'm going to do something new. I will yeah. give a little shout out to our friend, and I think he occasionally listens to this as well, so hopefully he doesn't mind a little shout out, as a guy named Ben Shirley, who is a really great example of this, of somebody who I met him when he was a student at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, studying there in their composition program, getting a very classical music education. And he was 20 years, give or take, something like that, older than the rest of the other students. And he had basically lived a whole life already. He had been even a touring musician and had even had some success, played big stadiums and things. But you know, life kind of bucked him off the horse, as it were, pretty aggressively. And he was even homeless for a while. And not in the couch surfing sense, in the skid row, fully living on the streets amid, you know, crime and drug deals and gangs and just really, really difficult living, and decided, I don't want this anymore. I want to figure out my life and go pursue music and the kind of music that excites me now. And literally just kind of started as if he literally is taking notes in class next to 18-year-old kids. And the thing that I love that immediately made
that
me bond with him.
That sounds so scary.
Well, but to him, probably nothing is scary. I mean,
that actually makes sense.
I
picture myself doing that, and that sounds so intimidating.
And what I loved was that I got invited to the school to give a guest lecture masterclass. This would have been the year or two before when you and I went there and did Dialogos. And I remember he stood out, not because he was older, maybe partly, but because he was the most engaged. He was the one most eager to learn, most, you know, young students, even in university, it's different from high school, but for young students who go directly into university straight out of high school, there's a certain amount of like, ugh, I have homework tonight and can't we just hang out? Right. And there's a certain amount of resentment of the schoolwork. Whereas, you know, unlike high school, university is completely optional. And if you don't want to learn, if you're not there to try to make something out of it, what's the point? You're just accruing debt and potentially crap tons of it. And Ben was everything that you would want a university student to be. I mean, it was like he was sitting there furiously taking notes and really and asking questions. I would say, does anybody know what this means? Or like, raise your hand if you don't know what this means. And, you know, the students don't want to admit that. He raises his hand. I have no idea what that means. Like, he was just, teach me. And you know, super talented. And I just adore that guy. He's one of those people that I immediately felt so grateful they had come into my life, because it also, he made me examine just how lucky my path has been that I haven't had to go through the kinds of things he's gone through. And the fact that, but it also gives you reassurance, like when times are tough, or you're really stressed, or you get kicked in the nuts by life, you know, there's somebody that's sort of managed to go through that and worse and come out and be seemingly in a good place. And I value keeping people like that in my life as a reminder that, you know, all things considered, I've had some cards dealt my way that are not easy, but there are people I know that would trade everything they've got to have had my problems, you know, of instead of the ones they've had to deal with. And I'm grateful for those reminders, because every now and again, like to the specific point, to your specific question on just putting myself under that microscope, every now and again, in the kind of darkest moments of the night, as it were, I'll have like a really stressful day, and I'll think to myself, maybe I don't want to do this for a living. You know, it's this dream job. I know I spend 99% of the time on here talking about how awesome it is, how great music is. I do, you know, You Gotta Hear This with Troy, which is basically just one big parade of me showing how much I love this art form and the past, its future, all of that. But there could be some days where it tests you. Life does that in general. Mm-hmm. And every now and again, I'll have this thought, like, what if I just moved away and started over? And I always immediately go to the question of, well, what would I do? I've spent my whole life trying to be good at one thing. The most obvious answer is, I'd like to believe that if I moved just about anywhere, I could probably get a job teaching based on my professional credibility. I could probably, right. I could probably, you know, maybe that's arrogant. Maybe it's arrogant to just assume like any university would feel lucky to have me teach.
I think it would be so great doing that, because you love telling stories and you love, you're so social.
It's true, but
I'm the opposite. I don't think I can handle a group of people.
I enjoy teaching on my own terms, and I enjoy, for example, I have a private Discord that is sort of the closest thing that I've got to students, and most of them are not really students. They're all younger than me, but only a few of them are actual true students. But it's the closest thing I've got to something like that in my life. The actual realities of being a teacher, a professor, or a high school teacher, or something is there's a lot of bureaucracy. There's a lot of sort of red tape and politics and things that I would have so little patience for that I would have to kind of start my own teaching business, I think. And the truth is, I don't know if I would enjoy that. I enjoy teaching and doing master classes or giving talks at conventions or conferences and things like that, precisely because I don't have to. I enjoy knowing that I'm doing a thing that might benefit people, but which I'm not dependent on. Like 99% of what I do under that banner teaching, I don't get paid for example. And I kind of like having that relationship with it. I don't want it to be a thing that I now have to think in terms of how do I optimize this, make it maximally efficient for earning the best possible living, all that kind of thing. And so the truth is, let's say I just one day tell you, I don't really want to do this anymore. Are you open to us moving to, you know, Kansas or Montana and living in a cabin somewhere in a remote area?
Oh, that sounds so much like a dream. You know, my plan in Costa Rica. I built a house in the woods. So, yeah, I'm not in a position at all of an image like that.
Yeah, well, let's pretend that didn't just sound like you're eager to leave Los Angeles. And
I mean, no, I literally built a house and I left it to start over. I literally it's did true. That. Left that my entire true. Life and I'm starting over a new life here. And
that's true. I don't think people realize you literally had to pay off debts associated with the construction costs on a house that you never lived one day in order to move to the U.S., which is very much akin to what we were talking. That's way more.
I'm just being a gentleman. I'm just like, you know, it was part of a deal.
That's way more along the lines.
I was like, you know, I'm not going to get in details, but my partner, Dan, we split the cost and we then split up. And then I was like, you know what? I'm not going to leave you alone with this. So here's my half and have a great life. So, yeah, it's good that is that, you know, he's there and he's enjoying himself. And yeah, that's great.
That is far more your version of the Neil Brennan story than the cosplay stuff, I think. Because that's a big life. Yeah. So in any case, I don't know. I genuinely don't know what I would do. I remember in high school telling myself I should make myself only good at one thing so that I have no choice but to earn a living at it. And that was my attitude about music.
I think being a teacher is too predictable for you. I think you will be a great guide, like a tour guide that has like all the stories of like, I don't know, the Fox lot and, you know,
I think
something
if
like that.
I honestly think that if I decided to move away, I would have to do something really unrelated because for example, in my imagination, if I really truly reached this breaking point one day where I couldn't do this anymore, it would be coming from a place of almost borderline trauma, I would think. And so the idea of living in that through another lens, like, okay, I'll just go work at the Fox lot and be a tour guide and just live a very kind of quiet life. I would spend all day still immersed in this thing that I was trying to get away from. And so that's why we were talking about Dave Chappelle, who just walked away from towering success and left everything, left the country. And I would have to probably do something on that level, I think, not that I have achieved the level of success or anything. It's really not even possible, other than John Williams and Hans Zimmer, I guess. Composers, there's no real composer equivalent even to the level of success that he was having. But if I, through my own little microcosm of it, I would think I would have to walk away and just, I guess, truly just trust that I'm smart enough and clever enough to just figure it out, to just find something. I would literally potentially come down to me walking, like if we moved to some town in Montana, I would have to just walk up and down the streets looking to see what businesses needed someone to needed help, needed a job, or was hiring for a job, and then just think, oh, maybe, you know, I can get a job here and then work my way up, take over the business or something. You know, like I think I'm a naturally very ambitious person. I don't think I would ever just settle in and want to flip burgers all day. It's like, okay, I'll start by flipping burgers, but I want to own 3 of these restaurants within the next 5 years. Like that would probably be how I'd operate. Cause I think that's just, no matter what field I'm in, I would think I would need to kind of see how high can I get with this? Cause that's very much how I am with music.
Well, luckily you don't feel any of this.
It's very hypothetical, but I think it's a valuable one because I have met especially younger composers many times over the 15 or so years that I've been in a position to meet people like that. And every now and again, I do meet somebody that I don't think is very happy, but they spent so much time thinking this is what I'm going to do with my life, that they're in this kind of cognitive dissonance where they can't accept that maybe they made a bad choice. Maybe this doesn't actually make them happy. And that's sort of an identity crisis where you go, I put everything on the line. You know, I took out a big student loan, or my parents took out a second mortgage on their house so that they could help me pay for this university, or this, that, or the other. I broke up with the love of my life to move across the country, to move to LA, all the whatever their version is, you know. There's a lot of people that sacrifice quite a bit in order to pursue it. And then when they discover, oh, I don't think I actually like this now that I see it for what it is, or now that I kind of get a taste of the reality. And I often try to be the voice that says to them, first, speaking only for my profession, first off, there are lower stress ways to use the skills that you've developed. You know, you could be like Susie, for example. Is a perfect example of somebody that got all the same training I did and then realized, you know, in general, special circumstances like Thai Cave Rescue notwithstanding, I'm not really interested in pursuing the life of a composer. That's very stressful. That's not a fun relationship with music.
Just as a background, Susie is your orchestrator.
Yeah, sorry. Susie Sider. Susie mm-hmm. Benchisil Sider. Went to USC, same as I did, and, you know, has a lot of experience conducting, and we have very similar kind of training backgrounds, but her idea of a good time of meeting young filmmakers and doing low budget films and games and what, that was never really her big motivation. She loved working with music and hanging out with fellow musicians, and very quickly found herself getting work doing copyist work and conducting and orchestrating, and so sort of none of the pressures associated with being a composer, but still getting to do music all day. So I often say, number one, remember that there are jobs like that. And there's actually not that many people who do that, because most of the people who do that want to make it as a composer, and they're just doing this to earn a living for the time being. But if you're like, you know, if you really want to pursue that and make that your living, I want to be an orchestrator, or I just want to be a conductor. You know, you'll find that there's a lot less competition in general. Still competitive, but not like the composer circles. And then the second thing is to remember, it's also okay to just walk away. And you don't need to give it any more weight than it already has. Like, it doesn't need to be seen as this cataclysmic, apocalyptic event in your life that you just kind of decided, actually, I think this isn't for me. And I think that there's no one telling you that. You know, when you, like when I was in school, all the professors and everybody, it was always make sure that, you know, never give up. There's always tomorrow. There's and you know, John Williams was in his 40s before he scored Star Wars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's always these reminders of like, don't throw in the towel. And that's true. I stand by that. You know, the one thing that every successful composer has in common, the one thing that is truly universal amongst them all, is that they didn't give up. That's the only thing that you can say for sure they all have in common. And so it's clearly a necessary ingredient. But if literally the only thing that's holding you back from happiness in life is giving up, maybe think about it. So yeah, so anyway, it's hard for me to imagine doing it, but you're allowed to think about it, and you're allowed to even investigate. It's sort of the equivalent of when we talk about moving and we kind of do what everybody does and goes on Zillow, starts looking around certain neighborhoods. What if we move to that neighborhood? That could be interesting. Like, I think it's okay to do that professionally as well. Periodically, right. Just imagine what's the, if only there was a Zillow equivalent. but I think it is okay to give yourself permission to pause 24/7 fantasizing about your dream and just ask if it is in fact the be all end all dream that
you think it is. I think it's worth it. Even if you, I don't know, 2-3 years in it, you feel like it's not what you thought it was going to be, or you're disappointed or whatever. You at least know that it's not your thing anymore. And then you can go pursue the next.
Do you ever ask yourself what you would do if you were not doing
fashion?
So basically the sort of
the cosplay, like, version.
Cousin of, yeah, the sort of like...
the professional version.
I started to say the grown-up version of cosplay, but the truth is that's a little condescending, though, because cosplay is pretty, like...
Yeah, I don't think of it
as... It doesn't have to be seen as a kid's thing.
It's not professional if you go and make the costumes for yourself and go to a convention and that's it. Nobody's paying for any of that. That's your thing, your hobby. So, yes, it's the grown-up version of a cosplay because... somebody else is paying for your work. And then, so I agree. It sounds a little funny, but it's not a lie.
I know I've said this before, and I may have even have said it on this show, so forgive me if I'm being redundant, but I often, well, often, not right, but I have many times thought that you would do excellent in the world of prop making, and because that's sort of similar to cosplay. But you have a real eye for practical, you know, I've seen it with your cosplay when we were doing The Light and the Void, even just things like the brooch that you're making.
Yeah, I can see myself in a studio and doing some crafts for a movie or something. That doesn't sound bad at all.
Yeah, no, I think that costume design and prop design, prop departments, they're some of the coolest jobs. I mean, what they do is so interesting and so clever. And I always love how it's sort of like game design from the angle that none of it's meant to look good. It's not functional the way whatever it's representing is supposed to be. In the same way that if you talk to programmers in the game industry, you often discover that most video games as software are kind of barely holding it together because it only needs to work well enough to work. It doesn't need to be this beautiful piece of engineering that, you know, will never die. It just needs to work well enough that when you boot it up on your PlayStation or in Steam or whatever, it doesn't crash and it will run well. And often there's shortcuts and all kinds of messy crap that the engineers have to do in order to achieve that, especially given finite time and resources to fully research the possibilities. And I see props and things the same way, like whenever you watch these behind the scenes and you realize just how crappy these things are if they had to do whatever they're supposed to do, not at all, or even just like...
It's like Homer when he gets like the surgery, the fat...
Yeah, it's all the like clothespins or whatever.
Yeah, pin with... Yeah, exactly. It's really...
It is 100% that.
A package door.
Ah, yeah, I think it's my shoes.
Ah, yes. I order new shoes for Austin. Let's see if they fit. for his Grammy ceremony. So
yeah, I last time I bought new fancy shoes was literally last time at the Grammys, and those shoes were so uncomfortable that after getting home, I never wore them again.
Yeah, they look good. They look great. I feel bad giving them to like Goodwill or something because they look as painful as they are.
They stabbed my heel so aggressively. I don't remember if I was bleeding, but I thought if I wore these much longer, I will be.
It's yeah, like these super shiny, you know, charol or whatever you call that material.
Yeah, they almost looked like they almost looked like tap dancer shoes, you know, very shiny. And but alas, no. So yeah, hopefully we do better this time.
We'll see.
But yeah, I think it's an interesting.
They're knocking the door.
Okay, yeah, go sign.
Sorry about that.
What I was gonna say was, this topic is an interesting kind of cousin of the whole New Year's resolutions, you know, what do you want to do with your life moving forward idea. It's more just like in an alternate universe, if you wanted to have a different life,
right?
What would you do?
Yes, I can see why it's a little related to that, but I intentionally picked this topic because it's the first episode of this year. So I'm like, you know what, let's start from the top.
Yep. The only additional trivia I can think of this is along these lines is I remember once reading that I think it was Morgan Freeman essentially didn't book his first acting work until like his late 40s, something like that. I think it was Driving Miss Daisy, and he was very much not a young man. And so this actor we think of as this legend, he spent half his life not doing this work, or at least doing it in total obscurity. And, you know, in a world where we have Billie Eilish and Zendaya and Tom Holland and people that are like children and they're superstars, mega celebrities, you know, hundreds of millions of followers or fans. I mean, people on a level of celebrity that, you know, is hard to comprehend. I mean, the King of England would have had fewer people know who they were if you go back a couple hundred years. Like, it's truly mind-blowing. You forget that there's quite a few that are not like that. One of my professors at USC, Morton Lauritsen, considered one of the most revered American composers, at least in the concert world and specifically the world of choir music. His career didn't take off until his mid-50s. You know, he wrote music, he did his thing, he taught at USC, lived a normal, modern composer life. And then a few of his pieces just kind of caught fire and became very popular. And suddenly in his 50s, he was the classical music equivalent of a celebrity. And I always find examples like that, nice little reminders that, you know.
Honestly, I'm not an expert, but it sounds like the classical music is... It will be really rare to be famous if you're young.
That is true. Nico Muhly is a recent composer who in his 20s was already, you know, achieving quite a lot and was, you know, he was a protege of Philip Glass and was getting a lot of accolades pretty early. But broadly speaking, it is a very youth suspicious industry. Michael Abels is a good example of somebody who's just kind of stayed the course and you know, I don't remember how old he is, but
Michael, just in case, is the composer for Us. Nope, Get Out.
Yeah, he's 60.
Oh wow.
He'll be 61 this year. And here's somebody who never scored a film ever until just like, 5 years ago, something like that.
That's awesome. And I love that he is so, like, he embraced that. I remember the first time I met him, he was doing a performance and he was wearing red.
He was in the jumpsuit. Yeah,
the jumpsuit from Us.
From Us, yeah. Right? Yeah, and he was holding a pair of scissors.
A pair of scissors, yeah. I... I didn't know he was 60s. That is so cool. He
And bear in mind, this is a guy that lived in academia. You know, he was a teacher and he was working on operas and chamber music and things like that. And the idea of embracing the kind of circus Hollywood lifestyle.
Yeah, fuck everything. Just, have fun. That's so cool. Yep. I like it.
Yep. And now he's his opera, Omar, which recently had its L.A. premiere run, is taking, I mean, there's like 9 opera companies that are all doing it now. I mean, it is extremely rare for a modern composer to write an opera that then starts getting picked up by opera companies all over the place. I mean, so on the heel of Nope, which got him a lot of attention, although noteworthily not an Oscar nomination. I was sure he would end up getting an Oscar nomination because he's very beloved in the circles of people that vote on those kinds of things. And it's a very noticeable score. When you watch the movie, the score is a big part of the experience, as has been the case with all of Jordan Peele's movies. Yeah. And so I was really convinced he would get a nomination, but you know, those things are always, you know, how do you narrow it down to just 5 when there's, you know, 15 or 20 at least really noteworthy scores and all aggressively getting the attention of the voters and that kind of thing. It always goes to show how much it shouldn't matter for much. But in any case, to have a score that's even a viable contender for an Oscar nomination while an opera is rolling out that is getting so much attention is very rare. And, you know, in other words, to achieve high level success in 2 parallel kind of almost like different industries. They're both the world of the composer, but they're so unrelated to each other. So many composers that do one or the other and don't even know who's in the other space. They don't even, like the average film composer could not tell you who is the current leading opera composers and vice versa. Of course. And that's with good reason, you know, in the same way that if you ask me who are the top 10 metal bands today, I would be, you know, I know who the kind of classics, the Hall of Famers are, but I don't really know who's like, who's the new up and coming hot stuff, you know, other than I guess The Who. I don't blame people for kind of keeping in their lane, you know? And so it's really impressive to see someone succeed in multiple lanes. I just love that. I admire that so much. So in any case, that's a big tangent, but it was springboarding off the Morgan Freeman example of like, you know, some people, the dream that we have as when we're young, for some people, it was the dream that they shifted into having done something different with their life. And it's always worth remembering that because maybe when you're 50, you'll go, you know what? Actually, I want to start a software company that does, you know, like Word and Excel have been dominant for too long. I'm going to make the next word processor and spreadsheet software and I'm going to fix the world. And maybe you end up doing it. You know?
Yeah. You never know. People change. Like today I'm like, I am not ready. I will never be ready. I don't think I will ever be a mom. But I don't know tomorrow.
Yep.
But for now I'm like, yep, nope. Nope. Life is crazy. You know, you never know. You yourself have mentioned that before. We are on the same page, but we don't know what's going to happen later.
Yeah. I don't rule out that may become a thing that I find myself, I don't know, ready for, eager for.
Right.
But it's a thing I definitely don't feel qualified for today.
Oh yeah. I have a lot of work with Canvas alone, so I think I got my
Yeah.
I think I feel fine with her. We saved a life, and that's great.
Yes, our little troublesome rescue.
Yeah, I have 2 little things to share.
All right.
First one is a quote from Steve Jobs, and it goes, "Have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow know what you truly want to become."
True. Steve Jobs always a good example as well.
And I have the album of the day.
Ah.
From Nina Simone. I know you love her.
I do love Nina Simone.
The album, it's I Put Spell on You. Do you remember that song?
Oh, yeah.
The reason I chose that album is because it has a song that's feeling good. I don't know why I always feel so inspired and motivated, and even like physical, like, I don't know, my skin tingles, and it's just so, I don't know, it's so perfect to like wake up to it.
I love it.
I chose it because it's just like the perfect song to celebrate a change of pace, a life decision that changed things. I don't know. I'm explaining this so poorly.
Like. No, not at all. I will. You made me think of one to add to it. That's kind of a nice companion to it that also fits this. I had the sudden memory that Leonard Cohen, who died not that long ago and is widely considered one of the greatest songwriters ever, didn't even pursue songwriting until he was like almost 40, because he had really wanted to be a poet and a writer and basically felt like this isn't working out and shifted over to songwriting and became, you know, one of the greats. And I that was one of those things that I never really realized that until after, like, he died. When did he die? I just looked it up to, wow, it's already that 2016. In my mind, it was like 2 years ago. That's crazy. It's already already that long. But
what's but, time anyway?
For real. But yeah, that I, when he died, and I was kind of reading about him and learning things that I hadn't known, and he has a lot of songs that I didn't know, you know, a deeper body of work than just his hits, of course. I was shocked to discover that music hadn't been his goal for essentially his entire young adulthood, which is wild. So yeah, and he's kind of similar era. He came of age in a similar era as Nina Simone, so it's a good pairing.
Nice.
All right, love it. Well, welcome to 2023.
Yeah, better late than never.
Yep.
Thank you all for listening. This is Angela Bermudez.
And Austin. I was not sure if you were teeing me up or if you were just taking a breath.
No.
All right, bye.